surface deck race. That's its path. That determines its path, radius, temperatures. How far it goes is discernible. It depends on two things. What they call spreading loss. Spreading loss is when you shine a flashlight across the street. The light is so dim. Another one is what is known as attenuation loss. And attenuation loss varies as the square of the frequency. So if you have a sound, say that's 10 cycles per second, and shifts the color, the turbine is emitting something in the future. It will travel a long, long way. Whereas high frequency sound, the attenuated loss would appear at somewhere. So theoretically, when you have the ability to hear sounds, characteristic sounds, submarine hearing, submarine colors, ship propellers, ship gearing, over distances 500,000 miles. Now that's the sort of thing.
So when the Kootenai came across this so-called Soviet fishing vessel, putting out the little koi things, what would they have been hoping to?
What would the Russians been hoping to? I don't know. They might have thought that they had something on the bottom and they were going to mark it.
Yeah.
Why would they mark it? I don't know. Mark it. So that maybe, I don't know what the depth of one was, and maybe even one of the fishing trawlers would come along and drag it and destroy whatever was on the bottom. We do know that the Soviets implanted their own listening devices on the bottom off our coast.
And they would be listening on to Canadian? Do you know how they came across the waves?
Yep.
Now, on, if you could tell me about the submarine that you guys came across.
Yep.
You called it Echo 58?
Echo 58 was the designator given to it.
Okay.
The type of submarine is the Foxtrot class Soviet submarine.
Okay. What is the Foxtrot?
Torpedo firing submarine.
Okay.
Let's see. Do you want to turn that off?
Yeah. Okay, so in the Foxtrot, later on they found out that there was nuclear missiles aboard, or speculated.
The torpedoes have a nuclear warhead.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We believe they have a nuclear warhead.
Okay. And would they have been using them themselves, or were they transporting?
Oh, no, those would be for the...
They would have been for
the... And it wouldn't be all their torpedoes. They probably have a couple, maybe, probably two, maybe no more than four, would have three, and the rest would have a nice person.
And now, when the Kootenai discovered, the Echo 58. You tracked it for about 5.5 hours before it was lost in a group of other ships. And do you know now if it turned around or?
It was moving all the time.
It always was.
Yeah, it was tracking the street.
And when you were maintaining sights on it, did you follow it?
Well, we maintained sonar contact. We had to stay with it. It's going around like this, but we stay at the ship,
Now, on the submarine, would they be aware that they did know then that you had them?
There would be one slight thing, not mentioned on the video, but the British attackers on it. As you went into attack, you needed precise wind bearing information on the submarine. And it needed to be updated with dorsal, so you had a range recorder on it. And you could wind the range recorder down to get closer and closer to the submarine. And as you wind it down, then the transmission control things become faster and faster. Well, you have to be careful not to do that under your rules of engagement. You would not do something like that because it happened in the case of the submarine.
Oh, I see.
So keep the range, the maximum range, and not continue. But you have to be ready in the event that you receive distractions or something like that. You have to be ready to wind up.
Now, you mentioned that, or on the video it mentions that aboard the Kootenai was a single screw coaster?
No. What we did was we shut down one screw and just operated with one propeller.
Oh, okay.
So as to sound like a coastal passenger.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
But as the captain pointed out, most of the coastal shipping would have diesel engines. It would not have a steam turbine.
Right.
And the steam turbine noise would come down pretty close. So
that we were
a warship and not a merchant.
I see. So about, if you could tell me, just estimate, about the distance that you would have been at any given time from the sun.
Between 400 and 1,400 yards.
And when the, it was the SF, or S2F aircraft?
Yes,
came?
A tractor aircraft.
And he would fly over and mention that they dropped a smoke?
The captain would give them direction to fly.
Mm-hmm.
Overfly the ship, so now he could go up just on the sonar there, the ship out of the fire. And then descent low, and as soon as you got a mad point, which is just a magnetic anomaly like that,
mm-hmm.
as soon as you got that, you would drop the smoke and give the voice report mad point.
And then that would be.
And then he would turn around and he'd continue doing that, what they call mad travel on the submarine, while we were continuing to do the effort holding on the submarine.
So it was mentioned that the Canadian Navy had devised a method of doing the continuous navigation.
Maybe the captain, Pat Ryan, was an airman, ex-airman, you see.
Mm-hmm.
He was fleet airman before he landed the ship, so he flew himself.
And that sounded like it was fairly essential to maintain.
It would really help.
Yeah.
It was good at it. It was good.
Did you have anything else that you wanted to bring up? I'm sure I'm missing. Maybe I'll just stop this for now.
Okay. We will have loaded a 3-inch 70 caliber ammunition for our gun, 370. As proximity fused ammunition, but the special feature is you're able to use both against aircraft and against shipping. And 3-inch 50 caliber rounds as well. Mortimer 10 was an anti-submarine mortar, about 1,000 pounds. And torpedoes, anti-submarine torpedoes, which are fired from torpedo tubes on deck. And we had a full complement of those as well. So, all told, to go from peacetime ammunition, the wartime ammunition, takes quite a bit.
And they would have loaded the ship to be ready for its full maximum time at sea.
Yeah. And then in addition to the demolitions, the pyrotechnics of all the different types. Pretty well anything but bang fizzle like some. Wartime allocation was, which you definitely can't
Now, I know you can't speak for everybody, but do you know, of, as for the men on board, was this most of their first experience in a, say, a war setting, or possible war setting?
I would say for, I would say for most, yes, would be. It might have been a couple of old hands on board Coxswain. And would be the chief architect or the chief pilot of the surface. I might have served in Korea, but I'm not sure. I don't think well, we may have had a couple of hands who also served in World War II and C2. But I'd say for at least 80%.
Do you recall what was the kind of, I don't know, you guys were too busy to kind of probably feel anything about it, but was there a lot of excitement or apprehension? Just getting the job done.
Sessions. Let's all get together and see how we feel about this.
Good. Okay, I'm going to turn this off for now.
Okay.